supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. More than 1,000 participants gathered this afternoon at Penn's Landing to protest the Trump administration's immigration policies, particularly the separation of children from parents. WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies is just back from the event, and he joins me live in the studio. Dave, I understand this protest was organized primarily by unions. Is that unusual?
Yeah, it is sort of. You know, typically these kinds of protests are organized by immigrant activist groups and progressive political activists. This crowd was overwhelmingly union people, leaders, staff, organizers, shop stewards, each wearing T-shirts that identified their particular union. It was organized by leaders of two national unions, the Painters Union and Unite Here, which represents mostly hospitality workers across the country. I have to say most of the crowd were from out of town, locations from Washington to Massachusetts up and down the East Coast. So it was sort of picked to happen in Philadelphia, but nationally organized. But there were local leaders, and one of them who spoke, we can listen to here, was Brian Boyer of the Philadelphia Laborers Union.
The building trades is committed to fairness and honor. And snatching people away from their family at 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 is not the way you do it. We saw that once, and it was the trans-American slave trade.
Now, Dave, as Mr. Boyer noted, he represents one of the construction unions. Do they typically embrace immigration rights as an issue?
No, they don't. And that is one of the interesting things about this particular gathering, Dave. You know, the National Painters Union approached the Philadelphia AFL-CIO Council to support this. And while many prominent construction unions, including Local 98 of the Electricians Union, which, by the way, represents our own engineers here at WHYY, joined on, I'm told there was pushback and that some of those building trades unions who have a more conservative membership base, some of them voters for President Trump, were reluctant to support this. I spoke to Frank Keel, who is the spokesman for the Electricians Union, about why there was that reluctance. Here's what he said.
We do spend a lot of our time arguing against how illegal immigrants on construction sites in Philadelphia and elsewhere are taking jobs from American citizens. We're not anti-immigrant. We're just saying come here, but do it the right way.
Now, Keel did say all that aside, the policy of separating kids from their parents is such an offensive policy, one that shocks the conscience, that many building trades joined this effort to oppose it. I saw about 40 people at the rally with Electricians Union T-shirts and some other construction trades, but the majority of those at the rally were from the unions that typically support progressive causes.
Now, after the rally, the effort continued in the form of a march over to an immigration office. Dave, will this protest by labor unions have an impact?
Well, it's certainly not a game changer. No protest is. I mean, it'll obviously get some media coverage. But unions are an interest group that members of Congress pay attention to. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the building trades in particular contribute to and have relationships with Republican elected officials. If those officials see that this is something these union leaders really care about, it becomes part of the equation, something that they will consider.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies on NewsWorks Tonight. In other news this evening, a coalition of agencies has promised Camden's largest illegal dumping site will see new life as part of a community park. For WHYY, Kyrie Greenberg reports.
New Jersey lawmaker Nilsa Cruz Perez calls the 10-acre site an eyesore and a health hazard.
I get a lot of complaints about mosquitoes. Behind us is a whole bunch of tires. That's a nest of mosquitoes. And then when the community call because their children are going to school and there's rats in this area, mosquitoes in these areas, it's affecting our community.
The former site of an industrial medical facility that closed in the 1980s, the dump sits next to Whitman Park, near Patco's Ferry Avenue stop. Maria Mayo Massano of the State Department of Housing and Urban Development says plans for the revitalization follow 4 years of input from the community.
When you look at how a community can come together, they know what the problems are, but they also know what the solutions are. What we are just to help them along that way.
Tiffany Queensbury is a senior at Collingswood High School and says that while it took a long time for the cleanup, It's not too late for her five younger siblings.
Well, I lived here for all of my life, and when I leave for college, I want it so like my sister can be able to go to the park, and I'm happy that it's now, that I'm able to sit here and I'm able to watch it and see it for myself.
Demolition of remaining structures and remediation of more than 1,000 tons of soil contaminated with mercury will begin this year. New athletic fields on the former dump may open as soon as next summer. For WHYY News, Kyrie Greenberg.
You may have seen this video from July 28th making the rounds on social media. It shows an unarmed, clearly distressed man named Joseph Santos approaching Lehigh County police officer Jonathan Roselli before Roselli shot him 5 times, killing him instantly. Santos was acting erratically and attacking cars on Hamilton Boulevard near Dorney Park in South Whitehall Township, Pennsylvania, hitting windows and hanging on bumpers. Officer Roselli is now on administrative leave and he faces voluntary manslaughter charges.
We want a home where children are protected by our criminal justice system, not a casualty of it depending on their skin color.
This past Sunday, advocates held an interfaith memorial service in support of Santos and to condemn shootings of unarmed minorities by white police officers. Santos is Latino, Roselli is white. At the same time, just a few miles from the memorial, another group of protesters gathered near the site of the shooting in support of police. NewsWorks Tonight producer Shai Ben-Yaakov covered both events Sunday and joins me now. Shai, safe to say it was no coincidence these events were scheduled for the same day and time.
Yeah, it would be hard to believe. Make the Road Pennsylvania, which is a nonprofit that advocates for Latino communities, and they called for this interfaith memorial service. And in response to that, it seems, this group called Back the Blue announced this rally. Clearly, it was a counter-protest, and that really has set these sides up to be in opposition.
Shai, it seems like these two opposing groups were digging in their heels and sticking to their slogans.
Yeah, on the face of it, that's exactly what it was. I think anybody who attended the memorial service heard a lot of people calling for racial justice and end to police-involved shootings of minorities. And, you know, at the Back the Blue protest, what you saw was just a sea of these black and white American flags with the blue stripe down the middle that signifies support for the police. But, Dave, what I think is really interesting here is that if you dug down a little bit and talked to people, particularly at that police protest, what you saw were some nuances and diversity of opinion that you might not have gotten if you just read the signs and heard the honking horns.
Yeah, but Shai, I bet it's tough to discern diversity of opinion at this kind of a highly charged rally. What's an example of nuance?
Well, I talked to one protester there named Peter Ramstein, and he basically says, police officers put their lives on the line. We have to give them the discretion to make a judgment call in a tough situation.
I saw a police officer doing his work job. I saw a man not complying to law enforcement. I saw a very honorable and respectful police officer do something that no cop wants to do.
But then I went and talked to Melissa Schneck, and she had a similar message, but with one important difference. And I asked her whether the officer should have been charged.
I'm going to let a judge and jury decide that. I'm here to support our police. I think too many people are coming down on our police, and I don't think it's right.
Yeah, so right there, she's saying, yes, I think police should have discretion, but let's let a judge and jury examine all the evidence and come to a conclusion. And I thought that at least opened the door to the possibility that this officer did something wrong.
Was Melissa an outlier at this rally?
Maybe, but I want you to hear from another man I spoke with. His name is John Hudak, and he was out there supporting the rally. And at first he had a similar message, I think.
I just want to support the police. You know, I mean, they've got this guy buried already and hasn't had a trial or anything.
Yeah, support the police, let the justice system playing out. But after talking with him for a little while, I could see him start to wrestle with this issue in his head. And eventually, he seemed to sort of admit that this was what he called an ifsky thing.
The guy obviously had problems. If I'd have been a cop, I'd have probably, tasered him. They didn't try to taser him. Or, you know, shoot him in the foot or shoot him in the legs just to bring him down. If I was so afraid, right, I sat in my damn police car and waited for backup.
And in fact, that's exactly what Joey Santos' family and community leaders said after the shooting. Why didn't Officer Rosselli use a taser? Why didn't he use pepper spray? Why did he immediately resort to deadly force? So I think this was a pretty surprising thing for me to hear at this protest, that one of the protesters really ends up making the same argument as the Santos family and social justice advocates.
Shai, do you have a sense that these two groups that were literally shouting at each other across town could have instead sat down and discussed their differences?
Well, I don't know if I would go that far, but clearly there was room for some people to sit down and say, okay, here's what happened, and debate the incident, which everyone acknowledges was tragic. I've covered a lot of protests over the years, Dave, and in general, I think a very loud message like this doesn't leave much room for people to actually talk. And that's a shame, because had these people been able to sit in a room together, they may have come away with a new opinion or at least a little bit of understanding of the humanity of the other side, which really seemed lacking in this case.
Thanks, Shai.
Thank you, Dave.
NewsWorks Tonight producer Shai Ben-Yaakov. A grand jury report released yesterday implicates 301, quote, predator priests across Pennsylvania who allegedly abused more than 1,000 child victims. The report focused on six of Pennsylvania's eight Roman Catholic dioceses. Similar investigations were performed previously in Philadelphia. For victims and their families, having these reports come to light can be a vindication, but there are also a lot of difficult emotions they're left to process. WHYY's Kevin McCrory sat down with a Philadelphia area father whose son was sexually abused as a minor by a once trusted priest. His son later died of a related drug overdose.
Well, Arthur Basilis Jr., thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Your son was given drugs and sexually abused by clergy at Archbishop Ryan High School in Northeast Philadelphia. His abusers included the principal, a Franciscan friar named Charles Newman. This started happening in the mid-1990s and continued for years. Your son was emotionally ravaged by the experience. He eventually got hooked on heroin and died of an overdose in 2006. He left behind a young son. The abuse wasn't detailed in the two grand jury reports about Philadelphia that came out in 2005 and 2011, but the Archdiocese found the allegations credible and removed Newman from public ministry. You have a tattoo of your son's face on your forearm. You keep some of his ashes in a bracelet on your wrist. When we spoke in 2015, you showed me the shrine you have built to your son in your home in South Jersey. Here's a clip from that story.
This is why I'm in a self-imposed exile. I don't want to go nowhere.
Do I cry a lot?
Yeah, most of the time.
Were you always an emotional person?
No. Emotional? Nah, not at all. But this hit home.
So, Arthur, how are you and your family doing now?
The only thing that's changed is the date. Everything else is the same.
What's it like on a day-to-day basis for you?
Misery. I've been punished and placed into a dark hole. And now with the advent of this grand jury report that came out, I've been placed further deeper into the hole.
Why is that? Why did it put you deeper into the hole?
Because of the fact that this is what, the fourth grand jury report? So the victims, do they finally start to believe the victims now? It took four grand jury reports. It stimulates emotions that I want to keep suppressed. I'm probably going to read the whole thing, but I got to do it in bits and pieces. I got to do it a little bit at a time. Because of the emotions and, you know, the day-to-day pain that my wife, I'm tired of watching my wife cry. I'm tired of watching my daughter cry. I'm tired of crying. When does this end?
So when these reports come out, is there any bright side for victims and their families that at least there's some vindication that their story is being told?
Well, I think what it does, it gives them some sort of relief to finally show that they were telling the truth. The protocol that I say, this is an opinion, is that the church denies, deceives, and ignores They're more concerned about the abusers. They write those letters. They empathize with the abusers.
And when the bishops say now the church has reformed, we're taking this more seriously.
I don't care what they say. You judge a person by their actions, you'll never be fooled by their words. You know what I'm concerned about? I'm concerned about my legislators. This is the United States. This isn't Rome. Where's the separation of church and state?
And so you want a certain legislative outcome. What do you want?
Look, I want that SOL removed.
Statute of limitations.
I want it removed.
So no statute of limitations for child sexual assault.
Nope. No statute. And they, as a result of the fraudulent concealment by the church, they should at least have a 2-year window for victims to be able to come forward and hold it. Like
file civil charges.
Because you can't go back, you know, criminally. And I agree with those people, those priests in the grand jury report that says they're being denied due process. Guess who else is being denied due process? The victims.
And so when they say the Catholic Church, the lobbyists for the Catholic Church say that if we had this 2-year window where you can file a lawsuit retroactively, that's going to hurt the church financially. That might be unconstitutional. That's just going to bring people out of the woodwork who were seeking money.
So my question to you is this. So you're going to put the finances over the welfare and lives of victims?
But this isn't about you seeking money.
The two guys that molested my son and others, they're living large. They're not. Where do you think they're getting the money to live? You think they go out 9 to 5 and work picking up trash or McDonald's or minimum wage? They're laying up in their crib collecting a check from the people that donate.
So they're not in active ministry, but they're somewhere.
They're somewhere. And I got letters home that the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith stated that even though these two guys admitted to the sexual abuse of my son, they were not going to be removed from ministry. So the Pope's policy of zero tolerance, to me, is more of infinite tolerance.
Well, Arthur Basilis Jr., thank you so much for joining us.
I'm grateful for you giving me the opportunity to come on. I'm overwhelmed with satisfaction. It's been a bright spot in an otherwise miserable life.
Sorry, Arthur.
Thank you.
WHYY's Kevin McCrory speaking with Arthur Basilis Jr., father of a victim of clergy abuse. On a summer day, the Wissahickon Valley Park in Philadelphia looks like a great place to take a dip. It's surrounded by trees, it's secluded, and the water looks pristine. The popular Devil's Pool and the beach around it receive hundreds of visitors on hot days. But WHYY's Catalina Jaramillo reports the creek's water quality might make the experience far from delightful, and a new effort is underway to stop people from swimming there.
It's about 90 degrees in Philadelphia, and a bunch of families, teenagers, and 20-somethings are lucky enough to be escaping the heat at the Wissahickon Valley Park. Kids are playing and swimming in the creek. Parents are picnicking under the shade of sycamore trees, and teens are jumping into the water from rope swings. This is Philadelphia's most famous waterhole, the Devil's Pool. The bravest climb up to 17 feet while friends capture their odyssey on smartphones. Although there's a hidden danger lurking in this water, this is what most of them say about swimming here.
It's fun.
It's a lot of fun.
But it's pretty fun so far, to be honest. Like over there in that area, like it's pretty deep, scary too.
It's not just rocks and strong undercurrents that make this spot dangerous. The water itself could also make people sick.
There's poop in the water.
Maura McCarthy runs Friends of the Wissahickon, an organization that helps take care of the 1,800-acre park.
there is poop in the water. There are chemicals in the water. And that's really the long and the short of it.
Here's something you might not know. The headwaters of the Wissahickon are not in a beautiful mountain setting. Actually, the source of the creek is underneath a shopping mall parking lot in Montgomery County. From there, it flows through 15 heavily developed municipalities before reaching Philadelphia. In fact, as much as 90% of the water of the Wissahickon is treated sewage that comes from four wastewater treatment plants upstream. McCarthy says runoff, especially during the recent heavy rains, carries all sorts of contaminants from streets and parking lots into the creek, including poop.
Frankly, there is dog poop everywhere. Another source of poop is that we have no bathrooms for people, or very few bathrooms for people. And when people want to go to the bathroom, they're going to go, and they'll go in the woods.
Add other chemicals like oil and road salt, fertilizers, and occasional leaks from septic systems in Chestnut Hill. McCarthy says all of this can make people sick.
It's okay if you get your feet wet. But if you're older, you know, if you're with your children, you really don't want to be taking the chance of what you might find in that waterway. Don't put your babies in it. In fact, I'm not even super keen on people letting their dog drink it.
But most visitors have no way of knowing this. A few signs in English and Spanish let people know that swimming is not allowed, with no further explanations. And because the water looks clean, people think it's safe.
Es bueno.
It's good.
I'd say it's not bad, because like we can swim in it and I didn't get sick, so.
It's very clear. Never heard of anything biting anyone or anything like that, so it's always a good sign.
Actually, it's a bad sign if there's not a lot of insects living in the creek. Friends of the Wissahickon try to warn people about the poor quality of the water. But Amaur Bronner says most people don't listen.
Some of them just like not, don't say nothing. Like they probably be thinking like, well, we've been doing this for so long, nothing ever happened.
Yeah,
so they
say.
Just probably just look and just walk off.
Julia Raskin, who also works at the pool area, says people have been coming here for generations. And that's not something they want to lose.
You know, we don't want people to feel like they can't come here. But like I said, we want them to know what they're putting themselves into. Yeah.
Tests by the Philadelphia Water Department show that although water quality is improving, it's still not clean enough for swimming. Starting Saturday, Philadelphia park officials will be blocking access to the pool during weekends for safety reasons. Catalina Jaramillo, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Vinyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.